Hey, everybody. I'm Evan Farmer, and welcome to Disaster Diaries. I'm here with my co-host, Andy, and we're here to interview people who have literally lost everything and survived to tell us how they rebuilt.
I'm Andy Kruger, the CEO of BuildSOS, a disaster resilience company, and we're diving into the human side of disaster recovery.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump into today's episode.
So Evan and I are just getting this going. Thank you, by the way, for coming on. I may have told you that Evan brought this, you know, old friend, this guy who just had the most incredible story. This was our first real run through. He went through the Altadena fires, but like this story was just compelling and amazing. And half an hour into it, you know, I'm ignoring all my beeps and texts and phones and everything. And half an hour into it, I was like, oh no, I never hit record. And Evan had been texting me on the side, like, are we recording this? Are we recording this? And I just ignored the phone. So we just...
You're in great hands, Kelly. We are professionals.
Well, you're definitely recording this because I heard it when I logged on and I can see the flashing red light that says recording in progress. So
perfect. So just a quick introduction, I guess, Evan, for... I'll let Kelly introduce herself, but from my perspective, so I met Kelly a couple of months ago. She's a vice president at a company, a marketing company called Zomad, which I am interested in engaging in all kinds of things that we're doing. But it was funny because the main engagement path is with BuildSOS. And because of that, we were talking about disasters and wasn't even that many minutes in before Kelly was like, oh, actually, my house got hit by a tornado. And so I said, oh, that's amazing. So maybe
and awful.
And maybe you want to come talk about it. And the reason why I'm saying it's amazing is that it's unbelievable how many people, it's like one out of three people when I'm having conversations in this space, come in and say, oh, you want to hear what happened to me? Yeah. So that's where we are.
Yeah. And we've all been disastered. I don't know if Andy mentioned my history, but we both went to Tulane, separate times, different lives. I owned houses in New Orleans when Katrina hit. I wasn't physically there. So I lost a bunch. And then my wife and I had a house fire 3 months after we were married and about 5 months after we bought the house and burned it almost completely to the ground. We believe it was the car in the garage. I literally pulled the car in the garage. It was a car design that had kind of a known history of doing this, spontaneous combustion. It like literally within 20 minutes, it was gone. I mean, just everything. To make it even more comical, Andy, I don't even know if I told you this. My wife was working for Merrell Shoes and she was a design and a sales rep. And so our garage was filled with maybe 2,000 pairs of Merrell shoes, which are all petroleum based. So it's like a tire fire. If you want to have a fire, the last thing on earth you want are a lot of shoes or tires. And it was like the worst of all scenarios. I mean, it was literally, you know, Merrell shoes exploding out the window. I literally have a vivid memory of a flying, flaming Merrell shoe landing like on the grass, like not far from where we were standing during one of the explosions.
I have to ask then, Evan, because you're making me think of, remember when Yeti got huge a couple of years ago? I think that the origin story of them going completely viral was a house fire or a car fire where somebody was recording going through the wreckage and they pulled out a Yeti thermos or whatever, and then like opened it up and everything inside was still cold. Yeah. So now I'm thinking with Merrell, like, did something happen where like one of the shoes endured the fire and now can be a viral?
You see me running down the street with my Merrells on fire?
Yeah.
I'm already trying to plan the viral ad.
It wasn't the same one, but one of my husband's buddies accidentally parked on top of a pile of leaves and his car caught on fire, but he had his Yeti inside.
Oh, really?
And his Yeti still had ice in it when it all like extinguished. Yeah.
So I guess
I have a Yeti knockoff that I take into the sauna because I can sit in there for 45 minutes and the water is just as cold as when I poured it in. It's crazy. Those things are not natural. I don't know what's going on with them.
No, they're definitely worth it. And so, Evan, I was thinking too, what might make sense is I'll tell Kelly and our future guests, I have a quick version of what happened with me and my disaster story. I'll make a really short one. So I was in business school when Katrina hit. I had just met my girlfriend, now wife, at a dog park. We both had dogs, you know, great place to meet somebody. So we were dating for a couple of months. I had one more semester of business school left because I had switched around programs. And so I was like off by one. And Tulane, before you go into business school, like the Friday before Monday classes start, they do a booze cruise up and down the Mississippi, and it's just for the two classes, right? The two business classes. So we were doing our booze cruise, couldn't invite anybody else. We went up and down the river for like, I don't know, 2-3 hours, open bar, and then came back, and it was 3 a.m. and I called my girlfriend. I was like, hey, let's go out. And so we ended up going to all these house parties, and I remember literally looking at the screen and somebody had a TV on and there was this massive, you know, hurricane. They were like, oh, wow, look at it. But it's, you know, New Orleans. So it's going to happen a couple of times every year. So nobody took any notice of it. So anyhow, next morning, my current wife and girlfriend's mom had called 17 times and said, you got to get out of there. You got to get out of there. You got to get out of there. And we took it so non-seriously that we ended up walking a mile to breakfast, having a leisurely breakfast, you know, like a post-hangover breakfast. Walking back, we threw some stuff in the car, we grabbed the dogs, and we went to her parents' house, which was on the North Shore. So it was like an hour away. So anyhow, the next day, in the middle of the night, we left to go to Houston because everything was falling apart. But the crazy part of my story, the craziest part is, so I ended up finishing business school in California at UC Davis. And 6 months later, I was at a client site as a management consultant. And my buddy JR, who's in the same condo complex as me, I had a condo in business school. He called me up and he said, hey, something's wrong in your place. And I was like, what's going on? Because I had rented it out to an insurance adjuster who were the only people allowed back in for those months. And he said, yeah, there's black flies. Like the inside of your window is salt. It's like a sheet of black flies alive, like all buzzing. And there's a really bad smell coming out of your place. And I was like, in the conference room of my client's place, I'm like, okay, I got to solve this. So I called the cops, and the New Orleans cops are like, yeah, we don't care. After Katrina, they're like, you know, unless you're like actually on fire in front of us, we don't care. So I ended up changing the locks and I flew out there that weekend. And it ended up being that it was like a crime scene without a body. So it ended up that the person I rented it to, sight unseen, had sublet it to some guy he met at the gym, who had then given it to his girlfriend. And his girlfriend was had some substance abuse issues and also could be considered a working professional. And she used the place as her work from home place. And so there were arcs of blood from when she pulled the needle out. There was like blood all over the walls. There were burned spoons. My flip out couch had worn into the wall about an inch into the drywall. I mean, it's like not family friendly, but like there were so many things that were nuts about that. And so after being in California for a while, we ended up moving back down to New Orleans and we got married. And my wife said, the only way I'm ever going to be in that place is if you make sure there's physically no surface that person touched that I will ever touch, then I will go back and move it. So we ended up gutting the whole place and redoing it. But I say all that to say that there are some crazy parts to stories, the disaster stories. And we're interested not only in all of the, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened, but some of the absurdest things that happen post-disaster is sometimes the most interesting stuff.
Okay, Kelly, so we really decided to do this podcast with you without really knowing very much about you and your history with what you went through. All that we know is that it was a tornado. So if you could just start us off by maybe taking us back to that day where you were living just beforehand and kind of walk us through what your experience was like when you experienced this.
I actually kept a diary, a journal. All my life, I've kept a journal all my life. And I had to go back before doing this with you guys to go and read through everything that was going on because it was so chaotic. But also, I feel like I read through it and I was like, oh, I remember every single minute of this, every single minute that it happened. This was April of 2020. I was living in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was Easter Sunday that this tornado rolled through. And this is, you know, 4 months after kind of COVID had kind of taken hold of everyone. COVID wasn't a huge deal in Tennessee, to be honest, but people were still at that point taking it really seriously. Like people were keeping a pretty good amount of distance. We had just moved into the neighborhood. So Evan, it's funny, I know that your story kind of has a fire that happened in an early home, but my husband and I had moved in June of 2019. And then this tornado came through in April of 2020. So we weren't even at this house a year yet before it was destroyed. So that day, the tornado came through at about 11 o'clock at night. But that day, my sister had been there. we're new to Tennessee. My husband was military, so we had just moved there. We didn't really know much. It's just his assignment that brought us there. And my sister had come to visit us. She had driven and she was out in her car and someone was mowing our neighbor's lawn and kicked up a rock and broke her window. And this guy said, oh, you know, gotta go get that fixed, you know, because there's this crazy storm coming through. We thought he was just kind of nutty, like just kind of a nutty guy. He was nutty. And he told my sister that the storm was coming through, but she was leaving. So we weren't really that concerned about her and her window. She was going to get it fixed when she went home. We opened up the weather app and it said chance of rain. So we were like, okay, we're good. So we went about our day. Weren't really talking to our neighbors. We didn't know many folks around the area outside of people from work. So we were just kind of going with this nutty guy saying that there was a storm rolling through and the weather app saying chance of rain. That night, my husband and I, we went to sleep bed around 10 and 11 p.m. I wake up. I'm shaking my husband and I'm saying, Nick, there is someone shooting at the house. We're in like a suburban neighborhood. It's weird, but I'm like, there are gunshots happening at our house. And he's kind of half waking up and he's like, it's just the wind, Kelly, go back to sleep. And I say, no, there is someone shooting at the house. You know, he wakes up, he grabs a shotgun that's next to the bed. And I'm just like, so he's thinking that there's actually something going on. I get up and I walk over. We have there was a bathroom that was attached to our bedroom that had this big bay window in it. And I open up the bathroom and I immediately close it because the window is totally blown out. So what I was hearing was just glass shards breaking and hitting the inside of our bathroom, completely blown out. And our bathroom is just wind tunnel. So, and at the same time, on the other side of our room, we had this glass kind of green room, but it was entirely made of glass. The walls were glass, ceiling was glass, and that is shattering. So that at the same time is shattering so loud. So I ran out of our room. I still don't really know what's going on. I assume there's a storm, but tornado hasn't crossed my mind yet. I'm just like, there's something happening. It's really loud. Everything's breaking and crashing. I run out into our room because we had our dog, one of our dogs in our room, but another one of our dogs was in across the house and she's in our like office space in her crate. So I open the room, I open the door to our room and our house is fully dark. The front of our house has been blown out. The windows are blown out. There's water pouring in from our ceiling. The front door is blown out. I go into the office. She's in her crate barking. She's nervous. We had adopted her like 6 months earlier. And the window in there is blown out. So it's wind tunneling in that room. I open her crate to let her out and she bolts. She goes to a dog door that we had that we normally left open, but there is, you know, some kind of divine intervention because our fence had fallen and one of the panels had broken off and fallen in front of the dog door. So she didn't get out. So I grab her, run back into our room, throw her into our room. And I grab our other dog and I try to throw them into a closet because I'm thinking small contained space, right? Like I've never done disaster preparedness. So I'm like, okay, closet, contained space. There's walls here and there's a door. I can contain the dogs.
But did you know it was a tornado yet?
So this is like a 3 minute period so far. So this hadn't crossed my mind. But I open the closet door and there's 2x4 javelins sticking through the wall. So I'm like, okay, no, not in here. Close the door. I leave the dogs in our room, which ultimately ended up being like the most internal room that was the most protected. So I leave them in there. And then probably like the one thing that I did that was smart in this scenario is I run back into the office and we had a little like dingy filing cabinet that had, you know, our marriage certificate and birth certificates and like house deeds, things like that. I pull that into our room and then it's just me, my dogs. We didn't have any kids at the time. So it's me, my husband, our dogs and our filing cabinet just huddled in the room and we just hunker down. And then it's kind of waning. My phone goes off. Tornado incoming, shelter in place. I was like, great, excellent. So then at that point, Evan, that's where it was like, that was a tornado. Okay, that just happened. This is all past. And my husband and I are in there. This is past. We can tell the storm's not going anywhere. So we say, we have to go check on our neighbors. Elderly neighborhood, some of them lived together, but there was, you know, a much older woman who lived right down the street from us who lived all alone. So we found shoes. I don't even remember how. We found shoes, pulled those on. And I went to go check on our neighbors right to the side of us. Nick went to go check on this woman who lived down the street. Both of them were okay.
You separated.
It wasn't too far away. So he could see me. I could still see him. But see is kind of relative because we had no flashlights, no headlamps. We couldn't get into our garage to get anything. And the power lines are down everywhere. It's pitch black because it's, you know, 11:30 at night at this point. Trees are down. There's just debris everywhere. There's like a roof in the middle of the road. It's absolute chaos. But so I go over there and he goes down the road there. So I check on those neighbors. They're fine. And then I go to go find Nick to make sure that she was okay, because I hadn't heard him like yell or anything. There's a couple hundred houses in this neighborhood. There's a good amount of people. I see where he is, and there's, you know, about a dozen people that are going around him, because, you know, God bless my husband, in a disaster and chaos, he is a level leader. You know, one of our neighbors actually ran from his house to our house looking for Nick, because they were just like, wherever Nick's going, that's what I'm doing. Like, that's where I'm going. So he is kind of trying to organize people, because there's no way that people are getting into our neighborhood. There's no law enforcement that's going to come. Fire trucks can't come. Paramedics can't come. There's no one that's going to make it inside. So Nick, and then we had another law enforcement officer who wasn't on duty that night. So he was at home. So they found each other, and they're trying to organize groups of people to go throughout the houses to make sure that everyone's okay. So this was a isolated community effort to make sure that people are okay. And like, again, you know, this wasn't true for the whole tornado. Unfortunately, there's about 10 people that died, including like a 4-year-old boy. In our neighborhood, every house that we went to, everyone was okay. People had lost their pets, but no human lives were lost, at least in our neighborhood. So that was a blessing. So at this point, we've finished checking on all the houses. It's about 4 a.m. And I'm like, okay, I have to go back and check on our dogs, because we had left them in the room. We also had chickens at that point, but I look up and their coop is wrapped around a tree. So I assume they're dead. I assume they're just all dead. And then we had just gotten about, I think it was a half a dozen baby chicks that were in our garage. And I was able to like wedge into the garage, and they were actually okay.
Was your house completely destroyed? So you walked out of your house. Did you turn back at any point and be like, is this still there?
Yeah. So our house had a lot of the walls. The structure of it was way better than many others. Our house was pretty small. We had a huge brick house on one side of us, and then the street and another brick house. The brick house on one side of the street had been smushed into absolutely nothing. Our house wasn't even brick, but the other side of our house was another brick house that I think blocked a good bit. So we got hit by a lot of debris and the wind. We weren't hit by the funnel. The funnel went right by us. So we got really lucky. I mean, the water that was coming through our house, ultimately that ended up being our chimney had been ripped off. So there was a bunch of holes in the wall. We had probably a dozen javelins of 2x4s just sticking out of the side. Every window was blown out. Our door was knocked out. There was a tree across our garage and across our cars, because those were outside. I don't know what we were thinking, but those were outside. So those got pretty much demolished. But we were able to go back, and our bedroom had, for the most part, all of the walls were up. We had our filing cabinet. We had our dogs. We had each other. And we just hunkered down. We slept for like 2 hours. And then the next morning, we woke up. I think it was like, 6 a.m. And we said, okay, what do we do?
How did you sleep? Were you just exhausted at that point?
We were exhausted. We're walking around the neighborhood. First of all, we hadn't slept. We'd slept like an hour. And then we were woken up. And now we're going around the neighborhood in this. I don't think Nick slept really. I know I did. I know I fell asleep. I'm not sure if Nick did really. We were just exhausted. And we were like, we know we can't get out. We know no one's coming in. And we have to do this again tomorrow. Like, we have to help again tomorrow. I think we had slept for like 2 hours. We were back up around 6, woke up. And we were like, what do we do? So the first thing that we did was we walked, because it was now daylight. We could see, and we were trying to just kind of see really what the damage was. And it was catastrophic. It felt like, I've never been in a war zone, but it felt like looking at how a bomb would go off. And there was roofs literally looked like they had been picked up off a house, plopped down, or it looked like someone just ripped off the side of a house, or just took a sledgehammer. Like a giant came in and took a sledgehammer to a full house. It's just rubble everywhere. Road is torn up. It was chaos. It was just houses that were leveled. If you've been in a tornado zone before, one of the crazy things that happens, there's hundreds of houses in this neighborhood. There was probably like 5 or 6 that looked like they hadn't been touched at all. Like they maybe had a blown out window and that was it. But
well, anyway. I live in Tennessee. I actually remember when these tornadoes hit Chattanooga. We were in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was a big part of our life was hiding under the stairs and being prepared. And what do you do? And we luckily had a tornado siren near us, but it didn't sound like a tornado siren even went off for you.
I don't know if it was just the service was crammed. We had no alert system. And I think some of our neighbors might have had the TVs on. And so maybe they were getting the local news about it. But yeah, we were blindsided until I got that alert that was like, tornado, shelter in place, after it had already gone through.
So can I ask real quick, when you said that you didn't get hit by the direct hit by the funnel, I assume you found that out after the fact, because it sounded like it was just sheer chaos and you were getting the dog in the filing cabinet.
We could tell we weren't hit by the funnel because we could see the line of where it traveled. So we're on the outer skirts of that. So we were just hit by everything that it was kicking up and everything from the other houses and shooting out to the other side and hitting our house. It didn't go immediately over us, which was great. I got to get in this part because this part I think was just important because, like I said, we were essentially trapped in there. The trucks were coming and people were, you know, trying to cut up the trees to get tow trucks and fire trucks and all that stuff through. It was just going to take time. And so we had been able to get messages out to our family, letting them know we were safe. And we said to our bosses, we're not working today. I worked remotely at that time. But Nick, he was the active duty INI at the Marine Corps Reserve Base in Chattanooga. And his boss was somewhere on the East Coast, but he was essentially, you know, guy in charge at that base. So he called his boss didn't really understand the magnitude of what happened, but he called his guys and all the guys that worked there. They're like, okay, well, they're Pale Horse Marines. And they're like, okay, Nick's in trouble. Nick's family's in trouble and this community's in trouble. So they filled up backpacks with tools and duct tape and nails. And they had everything just in there and they just came in. So they were just going over barriers, jumping over trees, and they weren't allowed to be there, I guess, in any official capacity. But they came, they just dropped everything and they came in like 2 miles with all of that stuff and just kept going, you know, out to Home Depot to go get chainsaws and bring them back in. And Home Depot was like 4 miles up the road. And so they'd go up and grab those and bring them back. They helped everyone. They were there for a week, just hauling logs off, stapling up people's windows, just boarding up doors. It was incredible, you know, and then that was still day one. They were there and they stayed for about a week. And then while that was happening again, you know, I'm trying to help there, but I'm not that strong of a person. So I was like, I can make the phone calls to the insurance. Like, I think this is what I need to do. And I had no idea that's what I needed to do, but we had homeowners insurance. And I was like, well, our home is destroyed. I should probably let them know, I think. So I called them and there's like, we had USAA at the time and they're flooded with calls and they have these automated prompts. Like, did you experience a disaster? Like, were you flooded? Did you get wind? And I was like, well, it's a tornado, which is kind of wind. So I say wind when I'm calling the insurance that our house was hit by wind. And so they don't call me back. My mother-in-law, like, bless her soul, she was lived up in Connecticut, but she worked in insurance for most of her career. So she calls USAA for us and she says, no, they were hit by a tornado. They were hit by a tornado. And so she helped us kind of walk us through, I guess, that process of here's how you get, you know, reimbursed for everything that was in your fridge and set up a hotel stay and get, you know, a furnished rental that you're going to need to stay in for. I was like, if I don't have to leave my house, I don't want to. She was like, you need to leave. You need to stay somewhere else. This isn't safe. So anyways, she kind of helped us walk through all of that process, which was really helpful because I was a genuinely ignorant of what needed to be done after that happened. And I was doing it wrong. Even more importantly, I was doing it wrong. I was giving people information that I thought was right, like wind, yeah. But no, you need to tell them it's a tornado because that's a very different kind of event. But yeah, so that's kind of what happened there. And then the week following was pretty crazy because day three, the roads were pretty cleared. People had come in with the chainsaws and so trucks could get through. So we had the National Guard rolling in and tow trucks, people coming in to help there. There's a lot of really amazing people that came from Nashville, from Knoxville, from surrounding Chattanooga to come in and help. There's a lot of those people. There was also the disaster tourists, which you guys may have run into before. Mm-hmm. So people that have no interest in helping, they just want to see the carnage. So they're just blocking up the roads. It's one-way traffic, right? So they're piling in with their phones out, just recording everyone. They're not helping. They just want to see it. Eventually, we had guards at the front of the neighborhood who were checking, or local police officers checking IDs to make sure you actually live there. They weren't letting anyone else in. And then we also had the pizza box guys. If you guys have ever been in mass disasters, I mean, Katrina, I know, had this. So it's just the people that are there to take advantage of other people. So they would come around and they'd have water and they'd have pizza and they would cozy up to people and be like, hey, I can do your repairs. I can do this cleanup. And they would have their, you know, trying to just get homeowners to sign on these like really overpriced and blatantly fraudulent contracts.
You can actually sign away in some of that paperwork. You can sign away your rights. So they actually can become the ones who are more front in line in your insurance policy. It's wild what these people are doing, how creative they are.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so embarrassing to be, I mean, I don't know how those people live with themselves. I really don't. Our repair process. So we had actually thought about doing some renovations in like our kitchen. We wanted to get new counters or something. And so we had been talking to a contractor and we really liked them. They were really great guys. But we learned in the repair process that not all contractors are created equal when it comes to disaster repair, because they have to work in these really specific, you guys probably know, but there's really specific systems the contractors have to work in to itemize the work for the insurance to approve it. We didn't realize that. So we wanted to work with these contractors that we initially were working with because we were like, these are great guys. They were going to do work on our house anyways. We know them. Like, we've already built this kind of quote unquote relationship with them, but they had no idea what they were doing in terms of insurance work. So we ended up working with other folks that were excellent. And it took like a year to get the work done. But that actually, that turned out we were ahead of a lot of people. So that work actually happened.
So can I ask you a question, Kelly, with that? So these guys who you knew, who were good, who may have been good contractors in general, when did y'all find out? Maybe you found out before they did, or maybe they had discovery like, oh, I'm not using the right system. How did that play out? Like, what was that process where there was a realization of maybe this isn't going to work?
Yeah. So we'd met them before the tornado and they were going to do this work for us. We had their number. That's essentially how we like made this decision. We were like, oh, we know these guys. We'll call them. We already were kind of in their queue. And they were like, oh, yeah, like we can do insurance work. No worries. So we had them come out. We had been talking to USAA and USAA was trying to talk us through the process of, you know, this is what we need your contractor to give us in order for us to approve the repairs. And honestly, USAA made that process super easy. But the contractor that we were trying to work with, they gave us this quote that was essentially, it was like two line items, insurance repairs, dollar amount. That was it. It was one sheet of paper. It was two line items and the total.
Fix the house.
And we were like, is this all they need? And they're like, this is all we can give you. Like, I don't really know what else you want. We gave it to USAA. They were like, no, we can't do that. And then the other folks we ended up working with. So that was kind of a flag. We were like, we're pretty sure they need more than that. And our contractor was like, I don't think so. Like, this is all we can give you. And USAA was really the ones that just flagged it and said, we need them to use this system. But they just said, we need them to use this system so we can see the exact line items of where materials are going, labor costs is going. And that's line by line by line by line. The quote we got from the guys we ended up working with, I wish I had their name because they were excellent. It was like 40 pages long of just itemized, here's everything that needs to happen. Here's where all the money is going. And USAA approved it.
So did USAA send out an adjuster? I mean, were you ever there like working with the adjuster and the contractor?
Yeah. So the adjuster came out and because it was a act of God is what they called it. They had the adjuster come out to basically confirm destruction. Then they relied mostly on the contractor to say, this is what needs to be repaired. So that took us about a year. What's crazy though, this is just kind of a funny story that happened during this. So our house, we were two doors down from a house that was on the market and it had sold. Their closing date was on Friday, but that ended up being Good Friday. So they said, hey, the buyer said, can we push this to Monday? Because it's Easter weekend, it's Good Friday, like we have our, you know, little kids, we're going to service. So they pushed their closing date to Monday, but the owners, it was the children of the parents who had owned the house. So the kids had set the date for their homeowner's insurance to expire on Friday. Tornado hit on Sunday.
Oh my.
Yeah, so that house was done in like 3 months because they had to pay cash for all of their repairs.
And of course, the sale didn't go through, I'm guessing.
Oh, no, no, no. They bought it. The buyers actually ended up buying the house after the repairs were done, and then they moved in later.
Well, at that point, they're like, what are the odds a tornado is going to hit it again?
Yeah, I think, and they worked with the sellers pretty good to be like, the sellers were like, well, what do you want? Like, we have to redo the house. Do you want, you know, this kind of floor? Do you want the house pink or white or, you know, what? So I think they worked together to keep the sale, but that was crazy.
What's crazy is there's a lot of similarities. I too had USAA insurance, and I too didn't know what to do first, and I too made all the mistakes. So I can completely empathize.
You only make them once.
That's exactly right. And that's kind of one of the reasons why Andy and I are doing this, is because there are so few people who know what to do the day after the disaster, or moments after the disaster for that matter. And it sounded like you and Nick were uniquely well prepared for that, in that he's a born leader, the military training. You actually used a term, Pale Horse Marine. Is that?
That's the name of their unit.
Oh, the name of the unit. Oh, okay. I thought we were going to coin a catchphrase that we could.
It's their catchphrase. It's from a verse in the Bible, but yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot more sense. But that's quite an amazing thing that, like, you know, and this is something that I love. It's not unique to the South, but the South tends to pride themselves on the community effort that, I mean, Tennessee is the volunteer state, but the fact that you had a whole Marine Corps division rolling in, you know, but it also sounds like in the midst of the crisis, and the point I'm trying to get at, you know, how do we react in those moments of crisis? And you learn about yourself. And it sounds like you kind of got from Nick what you expected out of Nick, like he was just going to rise to the occasion. And what did you learn about yourself? Like, even when the tornado hit, you were the first person who acknowledged something was really, truly wrong. Your instincts were right.
Yeah. I pride a little bit on my instincts. I can usually tell if something's wrong or something's going on, but I wasn't then, but I'm a mother now. And so that bit of kind of sensing something off, you know, people make fun of me kind of a good bit about being as trusting and as maybe gullible as I am, but I was very proud of myself in this kind of situation where it was like, when it's real, when it's actually in front of you, how do you respond? It's interesting to just see how you are in these situations, right? If you've ever been in front of a predator, like ever run into a bear, like a real bear, you know, or you've run into a moose that has a calf with her or something like that. It's like, what do you do? The situations are different, right? Do you fight? Do you flight? Do you freeze? Or do you just, like, how do you respond? And in this case, it was, for me, it was, okay, protect my family, and which at that point looked like my husband and my dogs. And then logistics. I never thought I was a logistics person, but grabbing the filing cabinet, I'm pretty proud of myself for that. There is that. And then just I think how long I lasted before I broke. You know, we needed to get things done. We had to make sure everyone was okay. We had to make sure that we made contact. And then we just had to start. We had to start with everything else. The point at which that I broke was actually, so one of my chickens lived. It was like day one or two, she came back and she found her way back to our house and was waddling on our lawn. And I just like broke down crying, like she made it. And she was she'd gotten ripped apart by our dogs once and Nick had to super glue her together, but she made it. And I was like, this thing is resilient. Like, this is my resilient girl. And I just was like, it's insane to compare myself to a chicken, but I was like, we made it through this. Like, we can do this. We'll get beyond it.
There's something totally amazing about the resilient chicken, right? Because the whole chicken is supposed to be running away from danger. But here's this total badass chicken, right? Who's already been put back together after a dog attack. That's amazing.
I took a picture the moment I saw her. I couldn't believe it. We had found a couple of the ones that hadn't made it through the storm. And again, like, they were all locked in their coop at night and it was 30 feet up, wrapped around this tree. I was like, they're gone. Like, these like little creatures are gone. She was resilient. So were we. We made it.
So I'm curious, when you moved there, you said you've been there a little under a year. I don't know if you were in Tennessee before that and just hadn't bought the house, but was there ever a sense of, hey, maybe I should be aware of, you know, of dangerous weather in this area? Because after, I'm a New Englander, I went to school in upstate New York, you know, there are blizzards and hurricanes, but they're not, you know, they're New England hurricanes. So at that point, when I was growing up, they weren't that bad. But then I moved to St. Louis. And for a couple of years, I was a private school teacher in St. Louis. And I remember those pea green skies where a tornado was coming. Everything was still, and you could just see it was really like pea soup. And I remember this feeling of, oh, you're not prepared for this. Nothing you have ever done in your life has prepared you for what might happen in the next 15 minutes. And I was wondering, like, did you have any kind of sense of, I should know what to do in a tornado? Or is this the first exposure to that?
That kicked off the, you need to be better prepared. So what's crazy too is that everywhere that Nick and I have moved, and we moved to Alabama and then back to Tennessee and then to Wyoming, everywhere we've moved, in within a year, we've experienced some kind of close to some kind of disaster. In Tennessee, the day we moved into our house there, when we moved back, so this is in Friendsville, which is just south of Knoxville, my daughter and I were driving to go and meet Nick. We didn't get a funnel cloud, but it was a tornado type environment. So there was really high winds, really strong rain. A tree fell on our house the day we were moving in. The movers were there, a tree fell on our house. And my daughter and I were driving there, and I realized what was happening because it looked really similar. It looked like this looks like tornado. And we're on, you know, the highway. And I was like, I am not coming. I'm turning around. We're going back to where we were renting. I was like, I recognize this. This isn't safe. And I have my infant in the car with me. So I turn around. We actually got stuck. We got trapped on a road that had, you know, a tree fell in front of us and there was a tree down behind us. But I was like, well, we got to get out of here. So I got out of my car. The car behind me had come up. They ended up being like a lawn service folks. They had a chainsaw. So they were cutting down the tree. We were pulling it out. So we were just like, okay, we have to get back. So recognizing the situation is different. And actually here in Wyoming, a couple of weeks ago, we had one of the worst storms we've ever had in the past 20 years. And we actually have a tornado siren right outside of our house that does tests every Friday. But this storm is happening. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, it's getting green. It's getting green. Nick wasn't here, but I grabbed my daughter. I said, this just looks bad. I grab my daughter. The second I pick her up, the tornado siren starts going off. And I'm like, okay, but I know where to go now. It's not in the closet to these, you know, exterior facing walls. It's like, we're going to the basement. I called my dogs and I think they have storm like trauma. They're not well trained dogs, but they came right up button next to me. And we hunkered just in the basement in kind of our shelter area that we had already established. We're building a house in New York actually right now. One of the things that we're putting into our house is a storm shelter, because that will keep kind of our important documents in it, some bags that have, you know, important medication, contacts, like things like that. Like we have, you know, cash, things like that, that go into these kind of go bags that we have and kind of dedicated spaces. So we're always thinking about that. And then here, looking at homes here, because we use Zillow to kind of browse homes, but Zillow has a feature on it now that can tell you, I know that there's other websites out there that do this too. But when you're looking at a home to purchase, it'll tell you the risk factors for disasters. So a lot of the ones we were looking at, they're high fire zones. So they're at a high risk of wildfires. So we've been looking into like, okay, if we live here, you know, or at a likelihood for fire. So how do we prepare for that? And I'll be honest, we hadn't moved forward with those, so I don't really know. But those are things that we're definitely paying attention to in the places that we live, of what zone are we in and what do we really need to pay attention to and prepare for.
That's really cool that Zillow is doing that. Another piece of that is not only getting ready for a disaster that might hit that home, but also consideration of insurance, right? Because the house I had up in Sonoma in California a couple of years ago, my insurance company said, sent me a letter and said, you know what? We're not going to carry you anymore. We just don't think it's worth it. And there had never been a claim on there since we owned it. But it was a number, it was some algorithm that they used, and they just said, nope. And so we found the backup plan, and then we ended up, we're like, we got to sell this thing. And we sold it relatively quickly. And it's probably not a month that goes by, I don't think about that. We'll think, thank goodness we don't have that house anymore. Because if all of a sudden it's uninsurable, then you can't sell it. A bank won't give a mortgage on it. And most people aren't, even if they could buy it in cash, they're going to want insurance. So it's a really scary moment there, where even if you're prepared for what might happen in that, you might not be able to sell the house.
I had a rental house in Tennessee, and we had floods in 2010 that were like, they called a once in a thousand year flood, which now happens twice a year. But the house was on the Cumberland River, or the duplexes were, and the water came up, didn't completely flood, I didn't have to redo it, but it breached one of the lower of the duplexes. And just like Andy, you were saying, it then became uninsurable because then they reclassified it as a flood path instead of a flood zone or something like that. It was a classification that they make, and now a bank won't touch it. And I was very lucky in that I was able to ultimately sell it, but I had to sell it to a cash investor who's willing to take that risk, because it was a duplex that was designed for rentals. And, you know, the insurance alone was I mean, I say it was uninsurable. It was uninsurable in any reasonable sense. It was $12,000 a year, I believe it was the quote that I got, which was obscene. And it would have taken all the amount of profit that I could have possibly made, you know, from it. But buying in any kind of disaster zone, which unfortunately is spreading across America, these disaster zones of tornadoes, Tennessee is now officially in, I believe, I don't know if it's classified, but it is very much in Tornado Alley. It's shifted now from Oklahoma eastward and over there. And, you know, it's happening every couple of years where at least Nashville has been hit by tornadoes. Well, every year, actually, it's been for the last few years.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, you know, Build SOS, we're constantly keeping an eye on how things look nationally in terms of disasters and trying to get in there after disasters and see what we can do to help. And so I was looking online, you know, obviously with Texas and then some of these other states, New York, New Jersey. And after I kept on seeing state by state, I think I got into ChatGPT and I was like, can you tell me what states didn't have a disaster declaration in 2025? Here we are 7 months in. And it came back and it said, yeah, no, there aren't any. Every single state has had some level of, maybe it wasn't a federal disaster declaration where, you know, they came and gave funds, but every single state. So there is no place where you're not going to get some kind of a risk factor for living there. It's wild.
Kelly, I was going to ask you, like, looking back, and you've already kind of answered it in some ways where that, you know, you're looking at your new homes differently now. You're building a storm shelter in New York and paying attention to Zillow's rating of risk and all that. But if there's one crucial, maybe even just a small thing you wish you had done before the tornado hit, you had such a compressed time frame, so you probably didn't have that much bandwidth to think about it. But if there's one thing that you could go back and think, oh, I wish I did that, what would that be?
Probably gone to sleep with longer pants on. But someone told us, you know, we had a nutty guy tell us there's a big storm coming and we did not pay attention because we opened up the wrong resource and the wrong app that told us chance of rain. As a homeowner and a mother, that seemed reckless to not know where the better information was. You know, that's something I wish I had done, and I do now, but something I wish I had done better then of what's our exit plan? What's our any kind of plan? We had no plan. We had no plan. We had nothing. And so that I wish I had done better.
Pants and better apps. That's my takeaway. There's one thing that I kind of want to start as a tradition on this podcast and to ask every guest, and hopefully it works. If not, we'll just not use it. Question is, what would you say to someone listening who had just lost everything 5 minutes ago?
Call your family. Let them know you're okay. I'm sorry. It's so hard to say that things can be replaced because so many things are so precious and you hold them so close to your heart, but they're things. There's people that want to help you and they will. You have to know who to ask. Best person to ask first and foremost is probably your family and then your neighbors.
That's perfect. And that's exactly, you know, I wanted to compliment you and Nick on something that probably just seemed natural and a throwaway, but I love the fact that the first thing you did when you walked out of the house is you immediately went and checked on your neighbors. That is just the most incredible. That says so much about your character, who you are. I think it's beautiful. Kudos to you guys. I know there was a million people that came out and helped my wife and I, and it's just dawned on me that I probably owe them another thank you this many years later. That's what makes the difference. And again, like you said, you can lose the stuff. And I was able to get over that. I was pretty fortunate. I have very little materialistic virtue and I'm sentimental, but not that sentimental. So I was like, the stuff I can replace, people you can't. And I'm so, looking back on it, grateful for the people like you who stepped up. And we were very new to our neighborhood as well. You know, a neighbor let us sleep in their house. Another neighbor provided us meals and the resources were just there. And it was such an incredible experience looking back on it. Don't wish it on anybody, but if you do go through it, it's, you know, there's some beautiful moments too. So thank you for being a part of that for your community.
I think you're paying it forward too. Both of you are paying it forward now of all the kindness that you've experienced during it, you know, building what you're building. It's going to help a lot of people.
Well, I think what you said too, you know, you gave a lot of tips in here, and that's also a big crucial thing about why we're doing this, because it's things you don't think about until you've literally walked through the fire or tornado, as it may be in this situation. And Andy, in his work with Build SOS, is really kind of stepping up to answer the question, what now, you know, when it happens to you, and putting those pieces together and providing direction and resources, not only after it happens, but in preparation for, God forbid, it does happen. You've got the right insurance, you've got the right protocols, you know the questions to ask, you know the things to say, you know what to call a tornado. It's a very windy tornado, you know. Andy, anything you want to add to that?
I just am trying to figure out a way to make resilience chicken our logo.
I'm going to send you a picture. It's a crazy image. Make it into a sticker for you.
That's awesome. Kelly, yeah, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. And by the way, you're a really good storyteller. So that was engrossing.
Hey, thanks for listening to Disaster Diaries. And if you're moved by these stories that you've heard, please subscribe, leave a review, and share the show with someone that you think needs it. And to tell your own story, download the Disaster Diaries app, available at all app stores, or visit disasterdiaries.com. And if you're looking for help rebuilding, check out buildsos.com for support, tools, and resources to help you better prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters.